Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm very pleased to have as my guest, my partner, and my surgeon, both, Dr. Julian Gordon. Dr. Gordon was kind enough to come on the air with us when our Killer Close interview had to be rescheduled. She's overseas and had and couldn't get a phone line for the interview. She'll be on later. Dr. Gordon has been with Plastikos for about 3 years now, and I've had 3 surgeries by him. So I'm very happy that he was here in my time of need. Most of these were hernia surgeries, although I did get some cosmetic work done as well. And he's an excellent surgeon. I operate with him every week. We have a lot of fun. And I invited him to be on the show because we just haven't really talked about plastic surgery. And, of course, we're about plastic surgery here at Plastikos. Thanks for coming on, Julian. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Glad to be here.
So you want to tell the listening audience a little bit about your background, where you went to school and what you're interested in?
Sure. I went to Amherst College and then New York Medical College, then did a plastic surgery fellowship at UMDNJ in New Jersey. And I was particularly interested in breast surgery, and so I did a microsurgery and breast reconstructive fellowship at Memorial Sloan Kettering in Manhattan. That was an amazing experience.
Yeah, that's been very helpful here because, as our listeners might know, we do a lot of patients actually from all over the world with problems with their breast implants, and a lot of those patients are not just cosmetic patients, they're breast reconstruction patients, and if we're taking out their implants and there's some problem putting implants back in, which there sometimes is, other options need to be considered, or at least they need to be mentioned to the patient. They need full informed consent about what can be done.
Absolutely, I agree with you. There's a lot of very complex breast reconstructive procedures that, frankly, most general plastic surgeons aren't really trained in, and so it was an awesome experience for me to have worked with some of the best people in the world, and then now to be with you, having a vast experience there at Plastikos to teach me kind of the fine-tuning details of how to really take care of these major breast problems.
Yeah, I don't know if our listening audience knows, breast reconstruction is primarily divided into 2 categories. One is implant-based or tissue expander. If there's not enough skin, you put an expander in and expand it up, then sometimes switch it out for a regular implant. And a lot of times we have to use silicone gel implants in reconstruction patients when they have very thin tissue. Saline is less optimal because it shows through in wrinkles and can extrude easier. So we're back with silicone with that. And then some of these patients that we're treating don't react very well to silicone. They may have an HLA type that doesn't allow them to really have silicone in their body, or they may have an allergy to silicone. And we know that because if we put anything silicone on their skin directly, within a few hours it starts to blister. So that's not a hard diagnosis to make. So, you know, basically some of the women get implants back in, and that's good because implants are simple. I mean, it's a simple solution compared to some of the tissue transfer that exists. But when the patients can't have implants back in, Dr. Gordon has performed latissimus dorsi flaps here at the center, and of course he knows how to perform the other larger tissue transfer. There's the tram flap, the deep flap, and then all the way up to free flaps, which of course are usually the last choice because of the risk involved. But just know that there's a bunch of different choices for breast reconstruction, and the best thing to do is to go to somebody who can give you all the choices, just not somebody who and it doesn't matter if they do all the surgeries. Most of the time, if they don't do a surgery, they can refer you to the best person around. But you need to go to somebody who gives you all the choices whenever you have, and a question about breast reconstruction. Dr. Gordon, though, however, is very, very, very good at other breast surgeries such as breast augmentation and mastopexy. And we do a lot of that here in the office or in our surgery center because when we're taking out implants, sometimes we put implants back in, but a lot of the times the patients can't get implants back in for medical reasons and we have to do breast lifts. Would you like to tell them a little bit about the different kind of breast lifts that there are, and what we decide to do for people, you know, how we kind of analyze it.
Sure. I mean, there are basically four different types of breast lifts that are performed, and sometimes they're also combined. There's an internal breast lift that has no external signs of having had surgery, but where sutures are placed inside the breast, particularly after an implant is removed, to lift the breast and reshape the breast, reshape the lateral side of the breast to give it a nice natural contour. The most minimal externally visible breast lift would involve making an incision around the areola to remove some excess skin there to tighten up the breast envelope so that the breast doesn't have as much droop to it, and that also gives a more natural appearance to it. The result of that would be just a thin scar just around the outside of the areola. The next level of breast lift would be to add a vertical component to that, and that's performed when there's just too much excess skin or droop to where the periareolar lift is not sufficient. And so we take some more skin from the lower pole of the breast, which is basically from the bottom of the areola to where the underwire bra would fit, which is known as the inframammary fold. And then the final lift would be if there's an extreme amount of excess skin, and that would involve a scar also along that inframammary fold. And that's required to get rid of the large amounts of skin so that you don't end up with pleating and rippling on the breast.
So there's really two things we consider: how far up the nipple areolar complex has to come. Some patients come in with it pointing toward the ground. Other patients just come in with it slightly low. And then the other thing is how much skin, total skin, and where that skin's located, that needs to come off. Because you don't want to make scars on the upper portion of the breast at all. That's going to show, and it's not, and they don't scar very well either. So this is the kind of anchor pattern, lollipop pattern, or periareolar pattern that we use to take out the extra skin. And the internal lift is very, very helpful because there are deformities that occur. A lot of times Dr. Gordon and I have to repair muscle defects. And that, sometimes just alone repairing the muscle defects will really bring the breast into much better shape. So it's complex. A lot of surgeons don't know about all the different things. Most plastic surgeons don't know how to do internal lifts, haven't even really heard of them. And a lot of surgeons don't understand how to put the chest wall muscles back together. I think because I've had 30 years experience and Dr. Gordon had all the experience at the and the training at the reconstruction and breast fellowship, he does understand the chest wall muscles a lot better than the average plastic surgeon does. And so basically our practice is a little unique, and we treat a lot of people who have pretty bad results from multiple breast augmentation or explantation surgeries. But that's not all Dr. Gordon does. Dr. Gordon also does tummy tucks. And we want to talk about that for a little bit. It's called a mommy makeover in the press. But there's different degrees of, just like on the breast, there's different degrees of the amount of droop and the amount of tissue that has to come off. Same thing's true in the abdomen. Would you like to talk about what the different procedures we can do on the abdomen are to take off fat and to take off extra skin and tighten muscles if need be?
Sure. I've always found that title very amusing, the mommy makeover, but it's actually very fitting. Most women who are ever pregnant end up causing damage to their abdominal wall. And I can't tell you how many patients that I've had come in and say, I work out nonstop and I just can't get my stomach flat. Well, there's a reason for that. And that is when you're pregnant, the abdomen stretches and the muscles get permanently moved to the sides of the abdomen. So they move laterally. And so there's a constant bulge that forms on the abdomen that cannot be fixed through exercise. Literally, the only correction that can be done is to surgically suture those muscles back towards the midline. Now, there's varying degrees that this happens. the most minor of which is when it only occurs in the lower abdomen, and by that I mean from the belly button towards the pubic bone. So there's typically seen a bulge in the lower abdomen, and it doesn't have to be due to fat or skin. It's caused by the muscles being moved to the side, and then the belly bulges out. And so to correct that, the easiest way to do it with the least amount of surgery is through what's called a mini tummy tuck or mini abdominoplasty. And the word mini comes because it's only dealing with the lower half of the abdomen. And so there's a very short scar, typically exactly where the C-section scar would be. The skin and fat is lifted up off of the muscle. The muscle is visualized and then repaired back to the midline like it was when we were all teenagers. And that typically flattens the abdomen, the lower part of the abdomen. Now, there also usually with that is a little bit of excess skin, and that skin is just trimmed off. And you end up with basically what looks like a short C-section scar in the lower abdomen, and the bulge is gone. Now, a full tummy tuck is necessary if there's a problem above the belly button as well. And so in that situation, the surgery would be a full abdominoplasty or a full tummy tuck. You release the belly button by making a small incision around it. You make the same lower abdominal incision as you would for a C-section. The skin and fat is then lifted off of the abdominal wall so we can visualize the muscles all the way up to the rib cage. And then the muscles are sutured back together, repairing the way it was when you were younger, from the ribs down to the pubic bone. Another thing that is common with this situation is to have a small umbilical hernia. It's extremely common after pregnancy, and it's what you had, Dr. Kolb, that I repaired on you, even though you've never been pregnant. It's a very common small hernia that you can feel at the belly button. Some people will have some intermittent pains in that area, and that is paired during the tummy tuck as well. Simply by putting a small suture in and closing the small defect that's around the belly button. The results of this are very, very good. Women are extremely happy after having this correction. Many of them have struggled for years trying to get back to their pre-pregnancy appearance or their younger appearance before the abdomen was bulging. And it's just one of those things. It's one of the things I love doing in my practice because it's such a high satisfaction rate and people feel so much better about themselves. Even women who are overweight who have a tummy tuck, frequently after the tummy tuck will lose weight because they're so inspired by how much better they look after it. And so it's one of the procedures that makes me feel really happy in my practice.
And women who have a large overlap of tissue also have skin problems due to moisture under it. So even if they're overweight,
right,
if you remove the skin there, they do very well with, like you say, with gaining their self-image and feeling better about themselves. Because you simply can't hide that big roll of skin and tissue anywhere. It's just impossible.
Correct. And at times, insurance will actually cover at least part of the surgery if there is recurrent infections in that overlapping skin,
right,
which helps a lot of people to be able to get the procedure.
Right. We also combine liposuction. It's not smart to liposuction a flap because years ago we found that liposuctioning the part that we had elevated could increase the risk of complications, but we often liposuction the flanks when we do a tummy tuck, and if we're doing a mini tummy tuck, we also often liposuction the part we didn't raise up, which is the upper part of the abdomen. And so this contouring is kind of fine-tuned with the liposuction added. And Dr. Gordon does all the liposuction in this practice because I tend to not like to do liposuction as much unless it's just one area. So he's very experienced with liposuction. You want to tell them a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the things that's often added, and I hear a lot from patients, is the bra roll. So it's that roll of fat that kind of forms on the back when a woman has her bra on, and that's frequently combined with the tummy tucks and or liposuction to smooth that out. And basically, liposuction is a very simple, straightforward procedure. You make a very small incision. It's about a 5-millimeter incision. And then salt water is basically injected into the fat to help with bleeding and to help with the suctioning technique. By injecting the salt water, the fatty area gets more dense, and it allows the liposuction cannula to smoothly remove the fat that you want to. We then use a cannula that is about the size of a straw that is placed through that small incision, and then suction out the fat from the area that we're interested in a very smooth, simple pattern. And so after the procedure, there's usually one suture placed in each of the liposuction holes, and a binder is then worn, which is basically like a large ACE bandage, to put pressure on those tissues to help them heal and to help them contract into their natural position. And that's usually done for about a month. The recovery period is very quick. Many patients could have surgery on a Thursday or a Friday and be back at work on Monday. And it's a very high satisfaction rate on that procedure as well.
And I want to mention an advantage. We actually had something kind of amusing happen. Dr. Gordon and I were operating together, and he looks over at me and he says, "They're bringing in this machine to test here, and I need more patients. Would you like some liposuction?" So I said, "Sure." That was hilarious. Anyway, but what happened? It happened to me, and it actually happens in a lot of patients, and is in the peer reviewed literature. When you take this excess fat off. This is sometimes really good to help people control insulin resistance, which I was beginning to get is some insulin resistance, and that helps a lot. It helped, so I think it helped me metabolically as well as just, looking better in clothing. So I would encourage patients that, to think about that there can be some health benefits too. Unfortunately, the insurance companies haven't grasped hold of that and started paying for liposuction, but they certainly, it's interesting that does happen. So liposuction is something that, has been around for a while. It's a lot safer now than it used to be because we figured out a lot of things not to do. And it's a good way to contour places that you're unhappy with. Now, Dr. Gordon has got a new interest in. He's been doing them a while, but he has a new interest in butt augmentation. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's very popular here in Atlanta. There's basically two major techniques for getting a butt enhancement that are accepted by the medical community. We won't talk about what's been in the news with Home Depot caulk getting injected into people's buttocks. But the accepted techniques are basically a fat injection where you would perform a liposuction in one area of the body, process that fat so you have all the living cells of the fat, and then injecting those into the buttock region. And the second technique is to put an implant similar to a breast augmentation. And the butt implant technique has changed over the last 10 years. Used to be under the muscle in the gluteal region, which is the buttock muscle. The complication rates with that were moderately high as far as having seromas, which are fluid collections or movement of the implant. The technique has matured to where now it is placed above the muscle in a very specific surgical pocket that doesn't allow the implant to move and requires less patient compliance post-procedure. It used to be that the patient wouldn't be able to sit on their buttock for about 3 to 4 weeks, and now with the newer techniques, although you're not supposed to sit on it for 1 to 2 weeks, if you did, you wouldn't move the implant and cause a problem. And so those are really the two main techniques that are used. The buttock augmentation with the implant, the scar is along the butt crease, So it's not visible at all unless you were to hold your butt cheeks open. They heal very well. The fat grafting technique, basically once the fat is prepared and injected, it's just multiple injection sites into the gluteal region, and so there's no scar with that technique. The downside of the fat
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say the downside with the fat injection technique is it very commonly requires at least two procedures in order to get the result that you want, because we don't know 100% what fat is going to survive and what's not. Although most of it survives, it's about 80% on average, it usually requires a second surgery to get that last 20% so that the curvature of the buttock is perfect, whereas the implant, of course, is going to be perfect from the get-go.
And that kind of segues us into talking about stem cell fat transfer, which is currently under FDA study. They've got clinical trials now going on in the United States. I think Suzanne Summers was part of one of those trials for her breast. It's very important for breast reconstruction, especially less than total defects like Suzanne had when she had a lumpectomy. And it's
right.
important for our explant patients who may just want to fill in dents and get a little more volume, but of course, fat transfer probably isn't going to put 300 cc's into the breast in most cases. But the information now is that perhaps stem cell fat transfer is actually surviving even 20 or 30% more than regular fat transfer. And, of course, in the buttocks it wasn't a problem, but in the breast, if it calcifies, it can interfere with mammogram detection of cancer. So there was a big discussion amongst the plastic surgeons about the advisability of doing that. And most plastic surgeons don't understand that although Dr. Gordon does because he's seen it, a lot of these explant patients have infected tissue throughout their breast. And so injecting any foreign body in it that could then become infected would be a real problem. So we have to get them cleared up of that. But I think the Brazilian butt that we get with the fat transfer might be improved after we get the kinks out of the fat transfer, the stem cell fat transfer. And what this is basically is putting the fat, you harvest it the same way. You harvest fat, usually inner thighs, other places where you've got deposits, and then you put it through this machine, and then it takes out the stem cell component, which is a lot more hardy than the rest of it, and you re-inject the stem cell component, and that's something that, again, is going to require FDA approval before it's widespread, but that is ongoing. So that could change but augmentation to
that's
only need one procedure.
When it does happen.
Yeah, it is. Well, we're coming up on the end of our half an hour here. Is there any information you'd like to give them? I guess we could give the website. It's www.plastikos.com. We're located in Dunwoody, Georgia. We have a JACO certified surgery center with MD anesthesia here. I've had three surgeries here in the last year, and I can guarantee you that this is one of the best surgery centers that I've ever been to as a patient. So that's that's a plug for our place. We have great nurses, great anesthesiologists, and the only surgeon I've had here lately is Dr. Gordon, and he's wonderful.
Well, I appreciate it. I would say that it's very important to all of us at Plastikos for the patient to have a complete experience, from first trying to make their consult to understanding all of their options, and then to having a great experience with their surgery and their follow-up. And it is something special that I believe Plastikos has to offer.
I hope so. We've worked hard to get the bugs out and to get the patients the help they need. A lot of the cosmetic patients are fairly healthy. They do very, very, very well. My explant patients tend to be very ill, chronic illness, chronic infections, multiple chronic infections, endocrine, neurological, and immune problems. And even they do pretty good here because of, we take extensive measures to make sure that everything we can think of is done so that they don't have problems or complications. So and also our anesthesiologists are really, really good. They're Kennestone Group hospital-based anesthesiologists who come out here who do hearts and understand all sorts of things just beyond the regular anesthesiologist who might only work in an outpatient clinic. And I need right. that here because my patients are quite challenging sometimes, even from an anesthetic viewpoint. So I think we have a higher level of practitioner and provider here that the cosmetic patients can benefit from, although they don't necessarily need all that expertise, hopefully.
Yeah, I agree.
So how do you want to give the phone number to call and how they make an appointment with you if someone wants to come in for a
sure.
consult?
If you wanted to get a hold of me, you would call Plastikos at 770-457-4677. My cosmetic consults are free of charge, and so I look forward to meeting you and trying to give you good information and let you make an informed decision as to what you want to do. That's pretty much it.
Well, I also want to mention Dr. Gordon did, although we didn't talk about it, maybe we can talk about it another day. Dr. Gordon does cosmetic facial surgery. He did my facelift, did a great job on it. He also changed out my leaking gel chin implant, of all things. I don't think he knew that they had gel chin implants. It was put in over 20 years ago. And replaced it with a non-gel implant. So that's a pretty tricky surgery right there. He is good at a wide range of plastic surgery, not just what we talked about today. It's just that time's limited, and we are just going to talk about the things that he wanted to talk about today. We might have him on later on to talk about some other things. Thanks a lot, Julian. I really appreciate you coming on at the last minute and sharing with the audience what we do here. A lot of times we forget to even tell them we're doing plastic surgery. We need to do a better job of that.
No problem. I was glad to be a part of this.
All righty. Well, I'll see you around. And we've been interviewing Dr. Julian Gordon, who is my plastic surgeon and a very, very good plastic surgeon. Otherwise, I wouldn't have him operate on me, I can tell you that. You can read about him, see his picture, see his biography under the doctors at www.plastikos.com. Thanks a lot, and we'll be back in just a minute with Dr. Herb Bay Joyner to talk about water.
You had plastic surgery, Bill?
You bet I did. I got tired of the wrinkles around my eyes and decided to have Plastikos do something about them.
But I didn't think men had plastic surgery.
Get with it, Bob. Men want to look their best, too. There's nothing wrong with getting a little help from Plastikos to look on top of your game. A lot of guys are doing it, my friend.
Well, I don't know about this.
Look, you see the difference Plastikos made with me. I look better and I feel better. My Plastikos surgery was an investment in me.
So where is Plastikos?
Plastikos is in Dunwoody. Plastikos is staffed by pros who guarantee you personal attention. The Plastikos number is 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available. 770-457-4677.
I'm sick and tired of always feeling sick and tired, and I don't want to take a lot of prescription drugs to feel better. Isn't there a better way?
Millennium Healthcare offers natural solutions to your health problems. Millennium Healthcare is qualified healthcare professionals working with you to restore your health and wellness. Whether it's a caring physician, one of our natural providers, or our natural apothecary, Millennium Healthcare can help.
Hi,
for
Dr.
more information, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012.
Okay?
That's 770-390-0012.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.
Welcome back to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Cobb, and this segment we're talking to Dr. Herb Joyner-Bay about Penta water. Dr. Herb and I have been coming on the show intermittently for several years now, telling people how important water is to their health and how they can take advantage of some of the special technologies that Penta Water's developer found to purify and put a different sort of spin on water so that it is better absorbed into the cell. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Herb. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. How are you, Dr. Cobb?
Pretty good. Are we? Are you calling from California today?
I'm calling from the state of Washington today.
State of Washington.
I just finished my rather extensive tour of Canada and so forth, talking about nutrition, that kind of thing. So it's nice to be able to take a break here.
Great, great. Well, I guess we could start off with a little bit about how Penta water is different than other bottled waters, and what was done to make it more accessible to the cell and a better detoxification tool.
Yeah, well, Penta water was invented by two brilliant engineers, Bill and Michael Holloway, a father and son team, who back in the 1990s were experimenting with water to see if they could change it or restructure it to make it even more effective in solving biological problems. So they discovered a way to do this, to actually restructure water, and they started experimenting with it. They found that plants would grow faster using the Penta water. They found that they personally felt better. Bill was for 30 years an electrical engineer working for the United States Navy, putting electrical systems on ships, and as a result of that, was exposed to live heavy metals. That resulted in fibromyalgia. He found that the Penta water helped him to dramatically dealing with fibromyalgia. And they was able to help individual people with certain kinds of problems. One particular woman who had the preeclampsia, which I guess your readers or listeners know about, relative to problems during the caring of a baby and so forth, and other difficulties in helping people get through chemotherapy more effectively. So this gave him the idea this water product was really something quite dramatic, and so he started to produce it on a much larger scale, and that was the became the birth of what we know as Penta water today.
And it basically is a process. It's more of a mechanical process than a chemical process.
It's a mechanical process. It's a 13-step, 11-hour process. First, you ultra-purify the water. Penta water is the most pure water you can find anywhere in the world. Going through carbon filtration and reverse osmosis to take out everything that's in the water that could get in the way of getting the water into the cells. And then you slam the water molecules against each other in a very tight space so that you break up the water clusters. Most people think that water floats around in individual molecules very freely. It doesn't. It hangs out in clusters. It clumps together and then clusters. And the problem, I mean, it's okay. I mean, it's the way nature operates on an ordinary basis. But to get water into cells, water molecules have to line up single file to go through what we call aquaporins that were discovered back in the 1990s, for which the researcher got a Nobel Prize. They have to line up single file to get to those aquaporins. So if you have smaller water clusters, it's much easier for the molecules to line up single file to get to the aquaporins through the cell membrane and into the cell to do the work that water needs to do. So that's what this mechanical process does. The water is really put to a very high temperature, and the molecules are slammed together, and it takes a long time for the water to eventually cool down so it can be bottled. But this has been quite remarkable. What really blew my mind when I started working with the organization is that world-class scientists were really thrilled with what this work could do in research laboratories. Some of your listeners may have heard of Dr. Niels Bohr. Niels Bohr won a Nobel Prize for his concept of the atom being a structure such that the nucleus is surrounded by electrons that circle around it. That was his original concept, and he got the Nobel Prize for that. Well, his grandson, Dr. Jakob Bohr, is a researcher at the University of Denmark, and he and other world-class scientists are thrilled by what a pendant water can do compared to ordinary water in helping to lay down the structure of proteins and helping to improve what happens in cell culture media. There's one Russian scientist I met whose students have come over to this country and become some of America's top leading scientists. In fact, a major university built a $5 million laboratory for one of his students. When that man says a pint of water can do something that ordinary water cannot do, I sit and take notice. The Russian Academy of Sciences, and that organization has produced four Nobel laureates in physics. They tried to make restructured water the way, and their own technique and so forth, but their product was not stable enough. It would fall apart and go back to ordinary water clusters. They were amazed that Bill and Michael Holloway's product could actually be stable. Even when you freeze it or boil it, it maintains that uniform microclustered structure, which is really quite remarkable. So Bill and Michael could do what the Russian Academy of Sciences could not do. So I think it's really quite remarkable.
It is. It really is. And then, there's a lot of anecdotal reports about what penta water does for patients who aren't feeling well, patients with swelling, patients with toxicity. But I think some of the best stuff is actually what happens in the laboratory, what they've shown in the laboratory in terms
remarkable stuff that happens in the laboratory. I mean, we talk about hydration and getting water in the cells and so forth. They actually put penta water up against ordinary water and found that it hydrates the cells much more dramatically, much faster, much more efficiently, simply because you can get the water molecules to line up and go through the aquaporins much easier when the clusters are smaller. It's very straightforward. Something else that people don't realize, if water is not pure, then it has difficulty getting through the aquaporins. If any kind of heavy metals are somehow dissolved in the water, when the heavy metals try to get through the aquaporins, there's a structure inside the aquaporin that detects that and causes the aquaporin to shut down. So it's important to drink water that's as pure as it possibly can be just to maximize the hydration of cells in their interiors. In addition, this is a big deal among health food retailers, the whole issue of pH, of acidity and alkalinity. It's a very important issue because, Dr. Kalb, as a part of human metabolism, we generate a certain amount of acid. That's why we end up having acid urine and that kind of thing. And that acid-base balance is balanced between the exhaling of carbon dioxide in the lungs and the excretion of acid in the urine. That keeps the body in relative order relative to pH. But the interior of the cell is a very important place where pH needs to be controlled because if you have too much acid there, you can damage cell functioning. And remarkably, when you compare ordinary water to penta water, the penta water culture media resulted in an eightfold decrease, or the amount of reduction in the concentration of acid was eight times relative with penta water relative to ordinary water. That means there was a dramatic decrease in the concentration of hydrogen ion, the concentration of acid inside the cell when the cell medium was made from penta water as opposed to ordinary water. That's really quite remarkable. Just changing the amount of water that gets into the cell goes a long way in, of course, reducing the concentration of acid and in optimizing metabolism such that acid is better controlled. Most people don't know that we have buffering systems inside of cells and outside of cells to try to keep this acid-base balance in alignment and so forth, and by having optimal hydration at the cell level, you can go a long way in helping to deal with that. So this is a very important issue. Reducing toxins in the body, getting the toxins out and into the urine, quite remarkable, bringing down blood urea nitrogen, bringing down creatinine, dissolving calcium oxalate better than ordinary water. As some of you listeners might know, calcium oxalate is a major component of kidney stones. So if you can find a water that can more easily dissolve the calcium oxalate, can more easily keep the calcium oxalate in solution so it doesn't deposit as stones in the kidneys and so forth, you go a long way in helping people. So that's quite remarkable. It demonstrates the ability to do that. Some practical things that we find. There was a scientist working with Bill Holloway whose his wife came down with a melanoma on her leg, and she had difficulty taking or being able to tolerate full chemotherapy treatment. her liver enzymes would go up as a result of chemotherapy. Well, they put her on 4 to 6 bottles of penta water a day and found that the liver enzymes remained normal in spite of the chemotherapy. So she was able to tolerate the chemotherapy and go through that whole process and recover from her cancer. In addition to that, the John Wayne Cancer Institute in Southern California tried this with patients who became very nauseous and very ill as a result of getting full-dose chemotherapy and found that they were much better able to tolerate full-dose chemotherapy with far fewer side effects by giving them at least 4 bottles of chemo of pit of water a day. So it's really quite remarkable what it can do, in even on the most difficult clinical situations.
And water is one of the main things that we can easily change. I mean, we can't always change our diet as easily as we can the water we drink. I mean, if you think about it, but many of us who travel or who, you know, work in hospitals or, you know, whatever, you don't always have access to the best food, but you can change the water you drink, and you just have to decide.
You can do that. That's
absolutely
true.
Water.
And that makes this an enormous difference. I mean, it's amazing. In the years I've been in this field, it's really quite a few years now, I always find myself defending the underdogs, I call them the Cinderellas. I mean, underappreciated things that have been taken for granted. I think water is the main one. We've taken water for granted for so long. I mean, we think about it in terms of having enough water to drink, especially people in those regions of the world that's very dry. But in terms of the quality of the water that we're drinking, we don't think as much about it. And this is such an extremely important issue, the fact that something like this can go a long way in promoting wellness all the way down to the cell level is really quite extraordinary.
And then most of us, if we don't, then we're often physicians and doctors that do recommend patients take supplements for particular, you know, health challenges, and penta water has been shown to really help absorption of those supplements. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It's a great delivery system because it's better able to dissolve things and move things all the way through the cardiovascular system into the cell level. Then it really is probably your best oral delivery system. It does make an enormous difference the kind of water you're drinking or the kind of fluid you're drinking with your supplements and even your pharmaceutical medicines. To get them to do what you want them to do. It's amazing. I think you're aware of this, that elder people will just take a few sips of whatever they're supposed to be taking, whether it's a pharmaceutical drug or a nutrient, just a few sips to get down because they don't want to urinate frequently because they have difficulty
right.
with bladder control and that kind of thing. And they end up deliberately dehydrating themselves and reducing the delivery of water to the pharmaceutical drug or the nutrient where it needs to go. And that's, they're really harming themselves. In addition, even the pharmaceutical companies recommend that people drink plenty of water when they're taking either a pharmaceutical drug or the nutraceutical manufacturer saying that people should drink plenty of water when they take a nutraceutical. If they fail to do that, they'll end up getting more risk for nausea and stomach disturbance.
Right.
Because some of those substances will irritate the mucosal lining of the GI tract. People don't think about this. So drink plenty of water at room temperature warmer when you're taking your nutraceuticals or your pharmaceuticals. It goes a long way in delivering them to where they need to go and reducing stomach upset.
And the athletes found, too, that when they downed a bottle of penta water, because it was absorbed very rapidly, it didn't just sit in the stomach and make them uncomfortable during their athletic things that they were doing. So, you know, that's also happening with when you take supplements. You know, it just doesn't sit in your stomach like it would if you didn't take water with it, a penta water with it, or if you just took regular water with it. I think when things just sit in your stomach, that's when you tend to be nauseated because it can irritate the lining.
Yeah, it irritates the linings. A lot of people have these stomach linings that are just not up to par in terms of the quality of the mucus that's sitting there to protect the lining from its digestive juices and that kind of thing. And there are many contributing factors like food allergens and so forth, as you well know. So it's important to have things there that are going to minimize the concentration of these things that would otherwise irritate the stomach lining and get them out of the stomach and into the bloodstream so they can do their work. So it's important for people to be aware of that. The whole issue of athletic performance and so forth is a very important one. The University of St. Thomas and St. Paul, Minnesota, actually did a study with elite aerobic athletes and found there was a significant increase in athletic performance when the major hydrating fluid that was used for the athletes was penta water compared to ordinary water. a dramatic increase in their ability to perform, the ability to generate energy during vigorous aerobic exercise that was carefully measured. So one of the reasons is you're getting a lot of the lactic acid out of the cells and out of the, away from the muscles and so forth, so they can perform much more efficiently. You're accelerating the recovery time, or accelerating the recovery rate after exercise, so we're actually reducing the recovery time for athletes. They can perform much more vigorously and maintain their level of fitness much more easily when they're using panda water as a main source of hydration. This has been demonstrated repeatedly.
And not so sore the next day, too.
What was that?
Not so sore the next day, like for us.
Not so sore the next day because you flush the lactic acid away from the cell, our muscle cells. In addition,
right.
I mean, something else to be able to realize that all living systems depend on enzymes. This is a great miracle of all living systems, the fact that we can engage in biochemical reactions at relatively low temperatures, and enzymes, these big proteins, the catalyst for biochemical process, are the miracle of so-called divine intelligence or whatever. In any case, those enzymes are big protein molecules, and proteins, in order to be functional, have to maintain the appropriate structure to allow them to do what they do. Water is the backbone that holds everything together. They take
right.
those amino acid strands that are coded by DNA, and they twist and contort them and hold them in place in a strong but flexible structure so that they can do what they do. Optimal hydration is absolutely essential to keep those enzymes running, and this is extremely important in, first of all, dealing with things like free radicals. The catalase enzyme and superoxide dismutase that will reduce the free radical concentrations that are generated from ordinary cell functioning, as well as the kind of increase in free radicals that arise when people are exercising and that kind of thing. Dealing with all the other problems, the kinds of, to repair the proteins that have been damaged by exercise. The repair proteins need to be there to go up and down those protein strands and repair what has been damaged, what we call the microtrauma, the micro tears in the muscle tissue, much more rapidly repaired when using panta water as your main hydration source. In addition, something else that we see also, you at the cell level, this is going beyond even athletics, there are these special kinds of repair enzymes that go up and down DNA strands to make sure the DNA has been properly structured and try to deal with things like potential mutations. And you're finding with panta water, you have far fewer of those things, far fewer missing pieces in the DNA. These things that are, these are omissions that can occur in DNA strands because the water is there in sufficient quantity to help those repair enzymes go up and down the strand and repair what has been damaged by exposure to radiation or exposure to toxins of the environment or other things that could happen when cells are multiplying and cells are functioning. So all these benefits arise when you get water to where it needs to go, inside the cell and to the various structures inside the cell.
And I want to remind people that when they're on pharmaceutical medications, those pharmaceutical medications are detoxified either through the liver or the kidney or sometimes both. But if you don't have enough water, detoxification mechanisms, especially through the kidney, are compromised. And when you get buildup of these metabolites, of these pharmaceutical agents, and they start reacting with metabolites of other pharmaceutical agents, that's why I think it was published, I think it was in JAMA, that proper use of prescription medicine was the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. That's proper
Well, it's not surprising. I mean, at least something like 110,000 people die every year. We've known that for some time now. That's relatively old news, but it still hasn't worked its way down to the average person.
No,
and
it hasn't.
It's tragic. Like... And so what you're saying is it's so profound because people don't realize that the pharmaceutical drugs that we have all been tested as single agents with various people in clinical trials and so forth. But when so many people are on multiple pharmaceutical prescriptions whose interactions we don't fully understand, it gets to be even much more complex. So even when drugs
so you want to detoxify those drugs.
What was that?
You want to detoxify those drugs. You know, you want them to work, but you don't want the metabolites to hang around.
Exactly right. You got to get rid of them and get rid of them expeditiously.
Right.
The liver will help do that. The kidneys will help do that. And in the absence of optimal
and
hydration,
pinch of water will help do
that.
Yeah. So You had mentioned earlier about free radicals being decreased. You want to talk a little bit about that and how it may relate to decreasing potential risk of cancer?
Yes, free radicals, and we should remind people that free radicals are not liberated persons of extreme political persuasion. They are unpaired electrons that are desperate for partners, and they'll grab onto anything in the environment. They'll generate from exposure to radiation, just ordinary biochemical processes, athletic activity. These are normal things that happen in the cell all the time. But we need antioxidants present and antioxidant enzymes present to keep them under control. Optimal hydration will keep those antioxidant enzymes, that catalase and superoxide dismutase, operating so that you keep them, these free radicals, from causing damage. Now, what kind of damage can they cause? One free radical can damage 1 million molecules in 1 second. It's really quite remarkable.
Goodness.
We call the free radical cascade. And if those free radicals are generated in the vicinity of DNA, then you start damaging DNA strands, causing mutations, and you can inadvertently turn on cancer genes or oncogenes or cause other kinds of mutational problems. That's why it's so important to have the antioxidants in the diet, a full range of them, as well as optimal hydration to make sure the enzymes are keeping those free radicals under control. This is extremely important and something, again, that we overlook. And with our nutrient-depleted diets, people are not eating whole organic plant foods that give them a wide range of antioxidants, nutritional antioxidants, and our optimal hydration that will keep those enzymes running to protect us from superoxide and hydrogen peroxide that's generated by cells every day through ordinary biochemical processes. If that fails, then we are much more subject to DNA damage and to mutations and the kinds of cancer generation that we're all trying to prevent and control. So this is extremely important. Something as simple as water can go a long way in reducing this mutation rates. That's been demonstrated in laboratory experiments. And you can actually keep cells can survive longer. They're much more functional. They can survive under more stressful conditions if they are optimally hydrated. And it's been proven that panda water is superior in making cells more resilient than ordinary water.
Well, that sounds like at least five good reasons to drink panda water. And so,
five good reasons. What can I say? Well,
least,
one of the most important
least.
Things you can do when you wake up in the morning, drink that first bottle. That first bottle
right.
will do it. That gets your body rehydrated very quickly. I mean, I've known people I've given panda water to, and they'll drink a bottle in the morning, and if they suffer from things like allergens, like hay fever and so forth, they won't suffer for the rest of the day. Once you get the water into those cells begin to respond very quickly and
stabilize
much
those
more
mast
functionally,
cells.
And they feel a lot better.
Yeah, mast cells stabilize with quercetin and vitamin C, so there's no reason that they won't stabilize with panta water. It's just
exactly. I mean, the combination would be
really
great. Quercetin, which you get from apples and onions, and vitamin C,
right.
Great mast cell stabilizers along with panta water.
Right. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Thank you so much for joining us. Would you like to give the contact information for panta water if people want to go to the website?
Yes, they can go right to the website at pentawater.com. It should be it's right there. So let's look up. You can just Google panta water. It's right there. It's a great website. Lots of wonderful information, and you can post the questions. You can post there, and people we can respond to the questions they have. In addition, you can get information directly from the retailers who are selling the product. It's sold in health food stores all across the country.
Is it still sold at Publix, do you know?
I don't know. The sales reps
it used to be sold at Publix,
exactly,
but I haven't been in Publix lately, so I can't tell you. But it is at Whole Foods, definitely.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
Trader Joe's and the other, health food stores. All righty. Well, thanks a lot, Herb. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate
you
taking
Cobb.
The time. Wonderful information, as usual. This is Dr. Susan Cobb. We've been talking with Dr. Herb Joyner Bay about panta water and the health benefits of water. Next week, we will be talking with Star Wolf, Visionary Shamanism, Activating the Cells of the Human Energy Field. And on the next show, we will be talking about with Prasad, talking about her book, Fighting Cancer with Vitamins and Antioxidants. Kind of, we mentioned that today. And on the 14th, Lisa Beretta, Book of Transformation, Open Yourself to Psychic Evolution, Rebirth of the World, and Empowering Shift Pioneered by the Indigos. It would be the kids coming up. This week at Millennium Healthcare, Dr. Mike Greenberg will be giving a free lecture on the five keys to permanent weight loss. That's at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office, the 26th of June on Tuesday. You can find out more information by calling the office at 770-457-4677. Thanks a lot for joining us, and we will be with you next week.